right. Well, here we are. To dream again. To dare again. To feel enjoyment and happiness again. Or for the first time. To realize this is living. Be inspired. To see your life as an exciting journey of discovery. With your host of the Inspire Possibility Show, Mark Sussman.
Hi, everybody. This is Mark Sussman. Thanks for joining the Inspire Possibility Show. Every week, I invite various guests to join us who I find are inspirational, who can change the way we think, can get us to think about things that we normally don't think about. And this is a little bit of a divergence, and I've had someone before that's a little bit similar, and John O'Connor, who co-produced the movie about Mark Felt, who was identified as Deep Throat in the Watergate era. And I thought it would be timely to invite Richard North Patterson, who is a best-selling New York Times best-selling author of 22 novels, and he wrote a nonfiction account of the 2016 campaign Fever Swamp. And he currently writes regular columns for the Boston Globe and the Huffington Post. He's a former chairman of Common Cause, the grassroots citizens lobby founded by John Gardner, and a former member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He's also served at the board of the Brady Campaign to prevent gun violence and was the SEC's liaison to the Watergate special prosecutor. So welcome, Richard North Patterson, to the Inspire Possibility Show.
Well, thank you, Mark. Glad to be with you.
And I got to say to everybody, I've read a lot of Richard's books, and I know there's a lot going on right now, and what I was really curious about is getting your perspective on the difference between what's going on today with the Trump administration and the FBI and the special prosecutor, how that compares to what went on when Nixon was president, and do you see similarities and what you're thinking about that?
Well, there's certainly similarities. In both cases, you had a president who was accused at the least of obstructing justice by making maneuvers within the law enforcement agencies, the Justice Department and the FBI, to cover up crimes which implicated him. In the case of Nixon, the break-in at the Democratic National Committee, which he attempted to cover up. In the case of Trump, among other things, alleged collusion with Russia to influence the 2016 campaign in his favor by using stolen emails and fake news and the like, and later an attempt to cover up or obstruct an investigation into that, including conversations between Michael Flynn, then his national security advisor designate, and Russia about relieving sanctions. So there's a broad similarity there. Like Trump, Nixon was very resentful of the federal prosecutor Archibald Cox, ultimately fired Cox. There appears to be every prospect that Trump will try to do the same thing as Robert Mueller. So all that, in which I was at least somewhat involved 45 years ago, really does resonate. It was a wrenching time for the country, as many of us recall. That said, I think here's the difference I'm looking at. There were some brave Republicans who stepped up and took a bipartisan stance toward finding out what the truth was surrounding Nixon. Among them, William Cohen, who later on to become Secretary of Defense, is a friend of mine. Here we have yet to see whether the Republicans in these partisan polarized times are going to step forward and protect Mueller and the special counsel, the integrity of his investigation, or whether they are so afraid of the inflamed pro-Trump Republican base that they will turn their eyes away and allow Trump pretty much to get away with in my view, sabotaging the rule of law. So we've yet to see how that turns out, but I think we're going to see, and it's going to be fascinating and either uplifting or horrifying, depending on what happens.
Mm-hmm. So do you have any predictions?
I worry that the Republicans of 2018 will not replicate the Republicans of 1974.
Mm-hmm. Well, so far it doesn't look like they've stood against Trump at all. I mean, it's kind of disheartening. What do you? I mean, I was talking with somebody else who I respect, who's an attorney and used to actually be a prosecutor in the U.S. Attorney's Office with Bob Mueller. And I had coffee with him yesterday, and I asked him what he thought might happen in terms of we both agreed that we both felt that Cohn, who was Trump's attorney, will most likely be indicted. What's your feeling about that?
Well, you know, that in some ways is sort of ancillary to the Russia question. But Cohn knows a lot because he's been Trump's fixer over the years. He's been involved with his businesses, so he's involved with Trump in Russia, as well as obviously payments to Stormy Daniels, Karen McDougal, and perhaps others to keep quiet about their alleged involvement with Trump. You know, he's got potential criminal exposure for in the case of Stormy. Payoffs which might be deemed to be an illegal campaign contribution because they took place during the election of 2016. You know, she alleges that she was threatened in a parking lot by someone who was there apparently on behalf of Trump. I mean, what does he know about that?
Right.
There are banking regulations which he may have violated having to do with cash transfers under false pretenses, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So if I were Michael Cohn, I would not be a happy guy. And the question is what he might do to avoid prosecution and the prospect of the maximum sentence.
So what in the terms of turning on Trump, is that what you're...
Yeah, well, if he flips and says, for example, that Trump knew all along about the payment to Stormy Daniels.
Right.
That makes logical sense. I mean, you've practiced law for years. How many times did you go around making payments to people on behalf of a client and not telling the client? I mean, there are, like, problems with that. So then Trump's got some difficulty. He then potentially participated in violations of law at some level. And there's also the whole question about what Trump might, what Cohn might know about Trump's business dealings in Russia and whether any of that relates to the question of collusion or really, in legal terms, conspiracy with Russia to violate federal laws.
What's your feeling about the search warrant that was executed on Cohn's office in terms of what bothered me at a certain level was that apparently they took all the files, even files that I don't know for sure if this was the case, but that were they just took all of his files. And certainly with people unrelated to this investigation, there is a violation of the attorney-client privilege. Even though they say they're safeguards, I just wonder... It's like the fox guarding the chicken coop. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, the folks in the Southern District of New York, in New York Office of the FBI, had a little bit of a problem. If you believe that Cohn might destroy documents, and, you know, that's a problem. If you further believe that under the crime fraud exception, the attorney-client privilege is broken because he and Trump were involved in planning criminal or fraudulent activity, then you have another reason to do it. I mean, this is not an ideal situation, Mark, but there are standard procedures through which the FBI has a separate team to try to screen out privileged materials from not. Obviously, they had to get a search warrant. This was screened at the highest level of the Justice Department by Rod Rosenstein, the Deputy Attorney General. A magistrate judge had to authorize the subpoena, and I think you can be damn sure that the law enforcement officials involved with this did not authorize a search of the president lawyer's office and files without a more than colorable reason to believe that they had cause to believe that there was a crime. So, all that said, this is always a tricky area, but I don't really have a problem with what they did.
Right. What's interesting is that Alan Dershowitz came out against it, but the ACLU said it was fine because of what you're just saying, because of the fraud exception, crime fraud.
Well, Alan's taken a certain point of view on all of Trump's legal problems. Alan's a friend of mine. I have, as he knows, I have a diametrically different point of view.
Yeah. But it was interesting where the ACLU came out and said, hey, it's they had no problem.
Alan was saying, well, these ACLU should be all over this, and they'd be all over that, all over this if it were done to Hillary Clinton. That assumes a lot unfairly. I think what the ACLU said is exactly right. And I don't think that there's any more reason to disparage the motives of the ACLU, nor do I think that there's reasons to disparage the motives of law enforcement here. That's always what defendants and their partisans or objects of investigation and their partisans do when they're in an uncomfortable situation. They start blaming the law enforcement enforcer. I mean, it's a pretty tired game.
So, you know what I was wondering about is that there's a distinction between the independent counsel and special counsel. And I believe under Nixon there was an independent counsel statute.
Right.
But I don't think now that's still – didn't they do away with that?
Yeah, in the special counsel, if I understand, the distinction is somewhat more accountable to the Justice Department. Supervision then was Archie Cox, the Watergate counsel back then. But, the bottom line for the existence of a special counsel is the same, which is that, when you have an investigation which trenches on, say, the president, which it does, and the Attorney General Jeff Sessions, which it does because of contact with Russia, it is a conflict of interest to have the Attorney General directing the investigation. That's why he recused himself, acknowledging that there was a conflict. That's why Rosenstein appointed a special counsel, and this is a classic case for doing that. I mean, what stronger case for potential conflict of interest in an investigation of the President of the United States?
I totally agree. So what do you think is it? There's speculation now that Trump might fire Mueller. Does he have the authority to fire Mueller directly, or does he have to have Rosenstein do it?
Well, I think the majority opinion is that he can direct Rosenstein to do it, but Rosenstein has to do it or not. And then you go down the chain until you find the janitor, whoever is actually willing to do this.
Right.
I mean, in the Watergate situation, they went through Attorney General Richardson, Deputy Attorney General Ruckelshaus' house, and he got the Solicitor General, who's next in line, Robert Bork, who did fire Cox. And Trump go after Mueller? Absolutely. Should he? Not in a constitutional democracy. Will he? Probably, because Trump makes no distinction between the institutions of government and his own desire and self-interest.
So what would happen if, let's just talk about that, if he went ahead and how would he would just tweet like he normally does, say, hey, you're fired, or how would that be?
Well, no, I mean, he would place a call to Rosenstein. Rosenstein would, I think, refuse. He would fire Rosenstein and move on to the next person in the chain until he finds somebody.
What if Trump didn't do that? He just said, hey, called Mueller directly and said, you're fired. Could he? Because you're saying there's a split opinion.
It's not clear that he can do it that way.
Right.
It's not clear that he can't. But, I mean, why would he when he can find a more by-the-book way of doing it? In any event, if he wants Mueller to go, he can figure out a way to get rid of him. I mean, that's not – I don't know that there's a lot of doubt about that. Now, I mean, Congress could put up a fight. Congress could try to, secure the appointment of a new counsel or protect Mueller in some way. But will they? This Republican Party in the middle of election year with a
right.
Republican majority in the House and the Senate? I don't think so. And that's why they're saying, why so many Republicans are saying, oh, we don't think Trump's going to do that. It's because they're, that's a way of not answering the question, will you protect
right.
them? And it's a way of, like, praying ostrich-like that this won't happen, but I think we're going to have a day of reckoning here.
Interesting. I know there was talk of a bipartisan bill to give the special counsel Mueller, if Trump did fire him, an opportunity to challenge it in court, but I don't know what's happening to those talks now.
Well, apparently they've gone a little distance, but, they got to get it out of committee. They got to get to pass the House. They got to pass get it to pass the Senate. And then what happens? It goes to the president's desk.
Right.
Good luck with
right.
that.
Yeah. So what do you think would happen? I guess the big question is, it is, and today I just read on Politico that he pardoned Scooter Libby. And so I guess the question is, was that a message to Mueller and to Manafort and all these other people that have been investigated and convicted already or pled guilty? Was that a message to them, do you think?
Yep. I can't think of any other reason he'd do it. I mean, Scooter Libby's sentence is already commuted. The case
uh-huh.
is, I don't know, over a decade old.
Uh-huh.
And why now?
He right.
could have done it the day he steps through the door. He could do it the day he goes out the door.
Right.
Why now? I mean, I think it's clearly a message to anybody who might flip Cohen or Manafort in particular. That help is on the way. Just stand
right.
stand tall and don't talk to the FBI. I don't have any doubt that he would do it to save his own skin, because my psychological reading of Trump is there's only one person in the world that he really really loves, and he sees him in the mirror every morning, and so loyalty for him is a question of what's in it for me? And he wouldn't
right.
be pardoning Manafort and Cohen out of a deep feeling of compassion. It would be because, he really feels that otherwise he's in hot water.
Right. But couldn't those people still be prosecuted on a state level?
They could be, but, and a lot of people are saying that, but is the New York Attorney General empowered with the same personnel and the same statutory authority as a federal prosecutor as Robert Mueller? No. I think there's a lot of wishful thinking on behalf of people that want to see justice served, that it'll still be served without Robert Mueller, or that the Republicans will protect Robert Mueller or some such thing. I'm not so sanguine.
Right. So if he went ahead and did fire Mueller, I'm kind of getting from you, you're thinking that the investigation would collapse?
I think that he has some chance to either kill the thing or really cut down the parameters of the investigation and its subject matter. I don't think the Mueller investigation will come out of that hole if Mueller gets fired. He doesn't want people anywhere near his businesses, even though the businesses might be relevant to the whole question of conspiracy with Russia. This is who didn't want to disclose his tax returns. I mean, there's got to be a reason for that.
I know. And Cohn was his person that put together a lot of deals, is my understanding, in Russia for him.
That's my understanding as well. The immediate Cohn situation has to do with Stormy Daniels and the like. More broadly, it could well relate to Russia, seeing how, Cohn was in the thick of Trump's dealings with the Russians.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like, as you said, you're not real optimistic that this investigation is going to continue.
Well, I am not, and that would be a tragedy, because the whole thrust of what Trump's legal apologists are arguing is basically, when you add all up, to our guy is immune from prosecution and he's immune from impeachment. I mean, if you string together all of what they're saying, that's what it adds up to, and that's an argument for autocracy. Basically, it's an argument for the president being above the law, and it is a body blow to constitutional democracy and the rule of law.
You know, one thing about, back to the pardon thing, I'm thinking that what would be a good solution would be that a president cannot pardon somebody whose crimes are related to his administration.
Well, I think that's an excellent rule of thumb. I don't think that's the way this guy's going to behave, and there's nothing to keep him from pardoning somebody. The question becomes whether that is obstruction of justice, and that depends on his intent. If he's pardoning somebody to prevent discovery of his own crimes, that is very, very arguably obstruction of justice. It also is more than arguably impeachable, because Congress gets to define what acts are impeachable. Nixon obstructed justice, according to Cox, and I believe the first article impeachment voted out of the House of Representatives was obstruction of justice. So there's ample precedent for an indictment or impeachment of Trump for obstruction. And by the way, in spite of the insistence that a sitting president can't be indicted, the authority for that is very thin, and the logic is even thinner. The logic basically comes down to, well, it would burden the president in the execution of his duties. Well, so would a civil suit. The Supreme Court upheld Paula Jones's right to sue Bill Clinton during the Clinton administration. Impeachment is just as much of a burden as a criminal indictment, and we know that a president can be impeached. So the logic of that breaks down pretty fast.
What a lot of people don't realize is that even though you impeach somebody, it doesn't mean he's removed for office. You have to have a trial in the Senate. And with Clinton, I believe it went pretty much down party lines, but there has to be 2/3.
Well, Mark, you make an important point, because, the apologists for Trump, say, well, impeachment is so awful and there should be safeguards and it should be confined to violations of criminal law, which is kind of circular, because they're saying that, A, he didn't violate any criminal law, and, B, he can't be indicted anyhow. you know, the truth is that impeachment is a under Article 1, I think it is, the quote sole power to impeach is proposed in the House and Senate. And you're right, the two-thirds is a safeguard. I mean, if to get two-thirds of senators to vote in favor of impeachment really suggests that they have concluded there are the gravest affronts committed by a president. So,
which is not going to happen there's no way that would happen with Trump and with this Senate makeup. But what I was
well, the one thing I'd say about that, I think you're almost surely right, but if what is found is really awful, Republicans might be thinking, well, we'd be better off with Mike Pence than this guy. In which case there's a chance.
Right. My sense is that the Democrats, in a way, don't really want to impeach Trump because they would get Mike Pence, who's not going to have the baggage. He has some, but not the same. But it's a way of bringing out the mud and winning back the House, which a lot of people now say they're favored to do in November. And then at that time, they could institute impeachment proceedings because they'd have a majority and just drag it out some more. I mean, that's kind of what
impeachment's not going to happen unless the House flips, it seems to
right.
me. But, I mean, speaking strictly for myself, I mean, Mike Pence is a lot of things. He's a rigid right-wing evangelical. He's obsequious. At the same time, he's a bit of a schemer. And I don't think distinguished in any way. But he does not exhibit the kind of emotional instability that Trump does. And that's serious. I don't think we've had anyone in the presidency ever who gives off as much psychological radioactivity as Donald Trump.
Amazing. At least in our lifetime.
I read history. We've had some, thoroughly inept and mediocre presidents, but, I don't know that we've ever, I mean, to me, Trump makes Nixon look mainstream normal.
Well, the difference in my mind between Nixon and Trump is Nixon was like a career politician. He had already been vice president. He was a congressman. And he had people that were pros that were on his team.
Oh, yeah, he qualified for the job.
Yeah, but I meant in terms of hitmen that were pros,
right.
ex-CIA agents and people that were more secretive. And he had he wasn't as transparent as Trump is, but it was a different time. There wasn't as much transparency then as there is now, and maybe if there was, there wouldn't have been a Vietnam War. I don't know.
Well,
but we're running
right.
out of
that's
time.
Right.
We're running out of time. And I just want to bring you back to one thing, that this is the Inspire Possibility Show. And I know you paint somewhat of a dark picture of the political climate. What inspires you right now?
Well, I think that one of the upside of all the dire stuff we've been talking about is that a bunch of Americans are discovering, whether they're on the left and right, that they have values in common, respect for the rule of law, a respect for our institutions, a respect for compromise, respect for civility. I'm a member of something called the Renewed Democracy Initiative, which is people drawn from the right and left across the globe who are united in defense of the principles of liberal democracy and the rule of law. People from Mario Vargas Llosa to Larry Tribe at Harvard to Bret Stephens at the Time, Max Boot at the Post, Rob Reiner on the left. I'm on the left, I would say. But we all share a belief that Americans should rally to our institutions, respect the law, and have a renewed sense of common citizenship, and I certainly hope we can get there.
Well, I want to thank you for being my guest on the Inspire Possibility Show. It's been a delight.
I'm delighted to be with you.
And with you, especially because I've read a lot of your books, and before I knew you, I was always thinking, this guy, there was always a political overtones to your books. It wasn't like a great strictly a lawyer book or about a mystery and he's representing somebody. There was a lot of depth to your characters and complexity, and so that I always. But then I noticed, geez, he hasn't really written a book in a long time.
I went to the dark side, Mark. I started writing about politics, and now I'm a pundit, I suppose, as opposed to a novelist. But as I often say, the 2016 campaign made fiction redundant, so I had to do something.
All right. So thanks again, Richard North Patterson, for being the guest on the Inspire Possibility Show. Until next week, everybody, journey on.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com and click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine.